and welcome to The Face of Pro-Life. Today I'm speaking with a remarkable young woman, April Burke, and I'm just going to let her tell her story because she is just really a wonderful person and you're just going to fall in love with her. Thank you for joining me today, April. You have a great outlook on life, and I just want you to share your story with everybody because you started out with a lot of disadvantages and you've overcome a lot of challenges. So why don't you tell everybody how you started out?
Thank you, by the way. And I was born 4.5 months premature, and I weighed 1 pound, 13 ounces.
Wow.
Which is very small. It's small enough to hold in the palm of your hand. You could hold a baby that size would be to fit in the palm of someone's hand.
I'm going to show the viewers, and we have a model here. So this baby here is 4 months gestation, and this baby here is 5 months gestation. So just to give you an idea, you were just a little bit in between.
In between both of those, yeah. About in between.
Yeah, so you were born 4.5 months gestation, and obviously even the 5-month-old I can hold in the palm of my hand. So, I mean, just imagine how tiny and beautiful you were when you were born. But you said a pound, 13 ounces. And so the doctors must have used heroic measures to keep you alive.
Yeah, I was in the hospital for the first 3 months, and I was in incubators, and they had to do a lot of different tests on me. And I was hooked up to a lot of things. They didn't think that I was going to even make it. They thought that I was going to be, I was not going to walk, I was not going to talk. They thought that I was going to have a lot of different disabilities, that I was going to have, like cerebral palsy and all different, mental retardation,
right,
and things like that.
And a lot of developmental issues.
Developmental issues because I was born so early. You know, that your body's not developed, so you're gonna have you would have developmental disabilities. But I was fortunate, very fortunate, that I don't have any of those. There was only one disability or handicap that I have, and that is that I'm legally blind. I see only light and shadow, and I have detached retinas. And the correct term is retinopathy of prematurity.
That, I mean, that's amazing when you think about it. So you were in the hospital only 3 months. That really is not a lot of time, considering that you were only 4.5 months old when you were born.
Actually, technically, now that I think about it, I think that I was still, like, I came out of the hospital before I still should have been born.
Right.
Because 4.5 months premature, if I was in the hospital for 3 months, then technically I still wasn't supposed to be born then.
Right. 7.5 months. You went home at 7.5 months.
Right.
That really is remarkable. And the fact that you were given such a poor prognosis, and then you've overcome all the challenges that they thought that you were not going to walk. You obviously walk. They thought you weren't going to talk. You obviously speak.
Maybe good thing, maybe not. Maybe.
But like you say, that you, and obviously mentally and emotionally, you are fully developed. And like you said, the only difference is that you can't see.
Right.
And so you've met a lot of challenges. And another thing that occurred because of this dire prognosis, like you said, the doctors even said that you might not live beyond the age of 2,
mm-hmm.
Your birth mother did not feel that she was capable of raising you.
Mm-hmm.
So she placed you up for adoption.
Yes, she did. And I was placed in a wonderful home. My mom, she adopted me. She is, I consider her, she's my real mother.
Sure.
She raised me since I was 3 months old. You know, since I came out of the hospital, that's when she got me at 5 pounds. And she's given me a wonderful life. She's given me a lot of love, and she's a wonderful person. And I really commend her for adopting me and giving me, you know, a wonderful life and treating me, you know, as her own child and treating me like a person, like not like a handicapped. And my mom is amazing. She was a foster parent, and that's how she got me. She raised 55 kids within 4 years.
Wow.
Which is amazing. She helped bring up 55 kids. So she had kids coming through her home. She opened up her heart to kids, and she said it was she always tells me it was the best time of her life.
Wow, 55 kids. Yeah. That's huge. But to take you, I mean, really, the doctor said you may not live beyond the age of 2. To open her heart to that heartbreak, because I mean, really, you're going to fall in love with this 5-pound child, you know, when you're bringing them home, obviously immediately. And the thought that they might not, you might not survive to beyond the age of 2 would you've got to have a lot of guts to do that, because I don't know if anybody would open themselves intentionally to that heartbreak.
Right. And it's true. And my mom, you know, the fact that she did that is amazing. And she definitely, you know, is very, I don't know how she did it. It was wonder how
it's,
she did that.
I'm sure it's faith, you know, trusting God.
Is.
Yeah,
definitely is. And she's a hero for that.
Oh, yeah, so. Absolutely. I mean, she's a hero for taking you in. She's also a hero for, you know, taking in the other 55 kids.
Yeah, I know. It's a lot. It's amazing.
So she obviously instilled a great attitude in you, because, you know, a lot of people would feel sorry for themselves.
Right, absolutely. And I try not to do that ever, because I try to just live my life and do the things that I have to do. I mean, you know, I went through high school. I was mainstreamed. I went through public high school, graduated, and went through 2.5 years of college. And, you know, currently today I'm doing some volunteer work, and I'm trying to build my work skills. I'm doing computer training, and I have the person that's training me with the computer is also blind, so she's been a role model to me. And the way that I use the computer is with a software called JAWS, which is Job Access with Speech. It's an acronym, and it's a software that talks, which allows somebody who's blind to use a computer without a mouse with the keyboard, and they can pretty much do different. You know, you can learn it and do job tasks. You know, I'm actually learning Excel and Mail Merge right now, which are very very common things in the job place. So I'm trying to build my work skills so that I can be productive and be a productive member of society and join the workforce.
Now, you didn't get this, you know, get to this point without having been raised with the same type of attitude. Like,
right.
I think you've mentioned before that your mom pretty much treated you like all the other kids and wanted you to believe, you know, and know that you were just like all the other kids, and so you did a lot of things that many people might not
assume
believe
that a blind person could do. Yeah, when I was little, I was running around and the house and riding. I rode my bike. I was taught how to ride a bike. I had it on training wheels first, and then I was taught how to ride it without training wheels when, you know, around a complex. And I played with, you know, cars and trucks, and I went hiking in the woods and stuff like that, and with friends. And, you know, people always thought, like, oh, how does she do that? Like, you know, and they would say to my mom, like, you let your blind child do that. Why? My mom would say, like, you know, I want her to try the best to do things, and, you know, even if, she may or may not succeed, I want her to, you know, experience life and, you know, be like, try to be as much like everyone else.
Right. I mean, I think that's a great attitude. It's like she lets you, you know, try things out. And we do that. We always let our kids
right.
try things out. Now, some things they don't like, some things they can't do it.
Right.
But they, you know, you learn on your own.
I always try to do things. I always try, at least, before I decide that I can't do.
Right. Now, what's the craziest thing that you've done that you before you decided, Mom, that might not be for me?
Well, the craziest thing, I think the craziest thing, I've actually, my aunt actually allowed me to drive her Mustang in a parking lot, which is kind of a crazy thing on their behalf, but I think it's pretty cool. I did a program up at the Carroll Center for the Blind in Newton, Mass. Did a few programs up there where I met other blind people my age and of other ages, where they gave us a little driving course about like the road and stuff like that, and then they let us drive around the parking lot. And we took pictures. So yeah, it is kind of crazy. A lot of people are like, "What? Like you? Why would you even? Why would you even let that happen?"
But, of course, you're probably more careful than many of the Massachusetts drivers.
Probably. Maybe. I don't know.
I know you told me before that you did something else that I know I certainly wouldn't do, and it's crazy whether you're blind or not.
Oh, what was it? Oh, probably
the lake compounds.
Lake compounds. Yeah, I did a bungee ride. It was like 185 feet in the air or something like that, and it's one of the bungee rides they have there. And I did that with a friend of mine.
Oh, that's just really nuts. It really is nuts.
I thought it was fun, and a lot of people are like, oh, you know, well, you would do that because you can't see, you know, you don't know how high you are, and that's not really true because people forget there's other senses, yeah. And you could tell, you could feel yourself going up in the air, up, 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 and then you could feel yourself dropping.
Well, and then you know you've done it, so you know how far you dropped.
Right.
And you're still willing to do it, so you are really nuts.
I know. So I've been told.
It's just crazy. So I mean, we know that your mom is really a hero, mm-hmm. But we don't want to take away from your birth mom either, because she was smart enough and mature enough to realize that, you know what, I'm just totally not emotionally or whatever. She wasn't capable of doing for you what your real mom has done for you, and she wisely, you know, placed you for adoption, mm-hmm. and we want to stress that birth moms who do choose that route are really
remarkable, and it's a good choice for them, even though they may feel, I know I've talked to friends and they feel like, you know, I could never do that, or you know, they feel it's a bad thing because they feel guilty. But really what you're doing is, if you admit responsibility and you know you're not capable, there are plenty of people out there that would love to raise a child, and you know, you're giving your child a better life. You're allowing your child to live in a better way than maybe you could allow for them to. Mm-hmm. So it's a choice that, you know, as opposed to not giving your child life, which is not a good choice. You're giving your child life, because the other option is death, and that's not an option.
Right. I know. I mean, that's the thing that we run into all the time. You know, girls say that, you know, they want to have an abortion, and they wouldn't even consider adoption because they couldn't do that. And sometimes, you know, I just want to smack them and say, is it because you're too selfish?
Right, exactly.
This is not a thing. This is not an object. This is a human being.
Right.
And you're choosing to kill this human being rather than complete a family, mm-hmm. you know, with a couple willing to adopt or waiting to adopt, hoping to adopt.
Right.
And giving that child, you know, the best possibility, you know, to grow and mature into the person that God intended them to be.
Right, absolutely.
You know, God doesn't intend anybody to be unborn, dead.
Right, absolutely. And adoption allows for that. And nowadays, I mean, back when, I think that when I was younger, the records were sealed. But nowadays, you know, there is the possibility, if one so chooses to give the child up for adoption, that they can allow for maybe an open adoption where they can still maybe find out how the child's doing,
right.
Maybe in their lives if they so choose to, but know that their child is having a better life than maybe they could give them at the time. That
right.
They're not, people think, I think what it is people think because they're giving their child up for adoption that they're a horrible person, and that they're not, though.
No.
You're not. Things happen, and sometimes people can't raise their child,
yeah.
And you're giving them a chance at life.
Yeah, I really think that the birth moms that choose adoption are heroes too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously the adoptive parents are heroes, but the birth mothers are too, because they it's
right.
For some reason, society has told them that it's not a, you know, it's selfish, or you know, to not be, you know, not to claim your child, but it really isn't.
No.
And we just had a recent example of somebody who's very, you know, admired, who died. That's Steve Jobs,
mm-hmm.
Who was the co-founder of Apple Computers, and his birth parents were in graduate school when he was conceived, and
mm-hmm.
they maturely realized that they weren't ready to start a family, and so they placed him up for adoption. Just imagine, you know,
right?
What would have happened had he not been in the scenario, grown up in the environment that he grew up in?
How his life would have been changed?
Right,
right.
And in turn, how our lives would have changed, right. You know? So many people are saying, oh, you know, you revolutionized, you know, the computer industry.
Right.
And, you know, you wouldn't, you know, be able to do the work that you're doing now.
Right, absolutely. That's true.
So how many Steve Jobs have we murdered and not allowed to be born and placed for adoption?
I don't know. I don't even want to think about that number because it's probably too high. It's way too high.
Yeah.
The fact that that's even allowed.
So you grew up in a family, and I know you had two brother and two sisters.
And I have biological siblings too. I have actually met my birth family. I met them a few years ago, yeah. When I was 18. So I have other siblings as well.
And they're all close in age?
They're all, the birth siblings are, yeah, I have one brother and two sisters, and we're all pretty much like a year apart.
So. Now, did the siblings know that you had been placed for adoption?
Yes. Like,
okay, so they always knew.
They always knew that I existed, but never, I didn't know them growing up.
Right.
So it's good, and it worked out well, and it's a good story. My birth family gives total respect to my mom for raising me, and I definitely absolutely think that they should, because that's my mom, and
right.
Nobody's ever going to replace that relationship. But they respect her, and they, you know, we all get along, and I chose to look for my family because I wanted to know who they were. You know, regardless of what the outcome of
sure.
finding them was, I had no clue.
Right.
You know,
right.
it was nerve-wracking. I had no clue, you know, what I was getting into.
But, right.
Some people choose to, and, you know, how you know, I'm not going to tell people how they should feel about finding birth parents or, you know, things of that nature. That's, you know, up to them, but because every story is different, every
sure.
situation is different. But for me, you know, I chose to, and it worked out.
Well, I think it's great, too, because then you can reinforce that the decision that they made 22 years ago was the right decision.
Right, absolutely, and it definitely was, and they've actually even said that to me.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, because I'm sure sometimes, you know, they might have some, you know, regret or, you know, like,
yeah.
Oh, did I do that? We always do that. We
right.
always second-guess ourselves on big decisions that we make in our lives. And it's a happy ending that you can tell them that they made the right decision.
Right, absolutely.
So you growing up in like you say, you were mainstreamed. A lot of kids these days, you know, face, all kids these days face different challenges as far as, catty girls or bullies or
mm-hmm.
did you face those types of things in school?
Somewhat. I mean, luckily not as much as maybe some other people, but I did. I mean, most of the time kids were good and they were nice and stuff like that, and I made a lot of friends. I was lucky enough to make a lot of friends because I like people, and I've in high school and middle school and elementary school I tried to make different types of friends.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't put myself in a group or a category. I just hung out with whoever. And it's the same thing today. I have different types of friends, different ages and things like that. But I've had a couple instances that I find actually really funny that, and there's probably more, but there's a couple in particular that when I was in school I find really funny. There was one where both of them were in high school, but there was one where I was walking down the hallway and with my cane, and some kid bumped into me, and you know, they kept going, and then, you know, one of their friends that was with them was like, oh, you just bumped into the blind girl. And I turned around, and I don't think that they were really trying to be rude, but I tried to reinforce people that they don't need to address me that way. Like, you can say, like, you know, hi, you know, this is my friend April, she's blind. Like, there's a way to do it without making it seem like that's my label.
Right.
And so I turned around and I said, I do have a name, and you know, I said, it's April, and, you know, you can address me that way, and that's okay that you just walked into me, but I want you to know. And I think they were embarrassed, like, oh, my God, you know, like, she heard me. Or
oh, she stalks.
She stopped, and she talks to me, you know, like, and I was just like, it's funny how people act. But,
yeah.
So that was one story. And there was another where I was walking down the hallway in high school, and because we had a lunch period that was, like, split, so you would still have classes during parts of it or whatever, like, depending on what lunch you went to
right.
or what class you had. I think it was either that or it was, like, at the end of the last lunch, and I had like a resource or something or study hall afterwards, so I didn't have to really report to any, and I think I was even a senior on it, I can't even remember, where I didn't have to report to class right away. And so I was walking down the hallway and some kid was talking to somebody else and they're like, oh yeah, she's skipping class, you know, they're whispering it, like, you know, that's not right that she can be late for class just because she's blind, she can be late for class, you know, we don't have to. And I'm laughing, I turned around, I said something to him, I was like, well, actually, I'm not late for class, you know, I said, whatever the case was that,
right,
whatever it was, why I was in the hallway, and I was like, well, you know, just so you know, I'm not actually skipping class, I'm here. And then I'm thinking, like, okay, why are you in the hallways right now, and you're telling me I'm skipping class, and you're here you are, like, you're in the hallway, and you're saying this to me, and I just laughed, and you know what they did, they bolted down the hallway, ran, like
you're a ghost,
like,
or
I'm
something.
A ghost, or, like, they're afraid, and I thought it was hilarious, I thought it was the funniest thing, I'm like, it was priceless, it was hilarious. So
well, you have a lot of nerve, you know, calling them on there.
Yeah, I called them on it, I was like, that's... It's ridiculous, and you know, it's funny. I hope they're watching right now. Whoever it was, I can't even remember.
Well, you know, it's great that you have such a positive outlook, and like I know you've said before, you basically count your blessings because you know you weren't supposed to live beyond the age of two, you weren't supposed to walk, you weren't supposed to talk, and mm-hmm. and like you say, you know, the only thing that the only thing that's keeping you back is that you can't see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's really sad because a lot of kids your age, or, well, you're a young lady now, but like in high school age kids and even college age kids, they don't count their blessings.
No.
And they let, like, even little things just really fester. And there's such a huge suicide rate among teenagers.
It's sad, I know.
Could you even imagine, you know, something so dire in a kid's life that they think that they need to take their lives? It's really sad.
It is.
How do we teach our kids to have, you know, better attitudes and not let things...
That's a good question. I mean, just try to... Well, that's like not an easy question to answer, but just try to think that, you know, you're lucky that you're alive, that there's, try to look at other people, try to look at role models, and try to just talk to people and realize that your life, you know, that you're a special person, whoever, that anyone that's thinking of doing that, you know, they're a good person, they're a special person, and they have a lot to offer this world.
Yeah.
And they may be taking their own life, and they're taking away from somebody who may love them and want to get to know them.
Yeah. I mean, just, you know, like you said, that their lives are affecting other people, and not just now, not just the friends and their family, but their future. Like,
right.
are you taking away somebody's spouse?
Right.
By killing yourself as a teenager, and you have such a great attitude, and I think other young people should learn from your attitude that there's really nothing that you can't do if you put your mind to it.
That's true.
And nothing that in your life is so dire that you can't overcome it.
Right, that's true. I mean, we all have our days. All of us, you know, you're going to have your moments where you feel negative. I mean, I certainly do, but overall, I try not to because I think it would deter me.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think attitude is a lot of whether you succeed or not. Certainly not all. I mean, that's why you have challenges, but you try to overcome them.
Right.
And I think, you know, that's a thing that people need to realize.
So you obviously are up for different challenges.
Absolutely.
And you said you were mainstreamed.
Yeah.
But do you? Have you associated with other people in the same situation, and have you learned from them?
I have. I have people. I have friends who are blind, legally blind or visually impaired. I've gone to programs. I went to a few programs at the Carroll Center for the Blind, which is a facility that they have different training programs for blind people. Like, you would go for maybe a 3-month program, or, you know, 2-week, or technology computer training program, or independent living training program, or mobility training, where you can meet other people that are either born blind, or people that, adults, children, people that are going through vision loss, and I've met people and I've tried to network. I think networking is great. When you make connections with people, you can find out things that you may otherwise have not known, and people can help each other out and they can network and advocate for themselves. I think the thing is, people, you know, with disabilities or maybe parents with kids with disabilities who aren't knowledgeable, who aren't educated about their child with a disability, just need to try to research and branch out to people and talk to people and, like, not feel embarrassed and just learn, because there are a lot of programs and things out there that people can do.
And was your mom instrumental in hooking you up with a lot of these things?
She did. She helped me. She always encouraged me, and that's the thing I love about my mom. She was a wonderful person. She would always encourage me if I want to go to this program because it's going to benefit me, or, you know, I'm in school and I want to do this because, you know, and she would encourage me.
Mm-hmm. And as far as us sighted morons, what do you want us to know?
In terms of
if you were an advocate for the blind, what would you want us to know? Like, how
that
would your message?
There's a lot of things I could say, but I mean, just that one thing is that, you know, it's okay to ask questions, and that just being knowledgeable and educated about things is one step, and just to, like, listen and basically try to, you know, understand and take in knowledge, not be so timid, mm-hmm, to ask or to meet somebody or to branch out to know things about people with disabilities. And I think that also parents with even non-disabled need to teach their children growing up, because I think if we start it at a younger age, there will be less maybe questions or less, mm-hmm, people not knowing certain things or educated or programs that may be available out there, because there'll be people that will know and they'll raise awareness. Is if we start younger in the school system, you know, obviously in your school systems, you're going to have classes like math, history, science, all
right,
the, you know, all this thing, all the classes that are built into the curriculum, but they should really, I think things eventually need to change where they put a class. And they do have classes with people with disabilities, but I think it should be mandatory growing up, because that's a practical thing that in your lifetime, whether it's work, school, you know, on the bus, anywhere, you may encounter somebody with a disability. And you don't have to be, you know, an expert on how to deal with them, but at least know. And I think parents with any type of children should teach their children that it's okay to ask questions, and that, you know, they themselves can learn by that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are people with disabilities who don't have as good of an attitude, just like people who are sighted who don't have as good of an attitude.
That's right.
They can, and there are people that are offended by questions, but, you know, you just have to take a risk.
Right.
It's okay to take the risk, and you'll find out.
Anybody, you just treat everybody like a regular human being.
Right.
And don't whisper around her
because I can hear you.
Thank you so much for joining us today, April.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We hope that you learned something. We hope that you talk to your family and friends about the things that you learn. We hope that the next time you look in the mirror, you'll realize yours, too, is the face of Plural Life. Please join us again next time.